certainly more of a good evening, everybody. Welcome into the show. Thanks for joining us. Hey, if you're here, get here early. We do a pre-show. We all hang out and chit-chat a little bit, gather up and kibitz a little bit before the show. Coming up on the show this evening, some troubling signs in the economy, and we could be on the verge of a disaster unless we pass economic stimulus right away. Wall Street weighing in on this tonight and some warning signs in the economy. Also, who was leading those Capitol tours? You know, we heard about these tours that were being given the night before the insurrection at the Capitol, the riots. What members of Congress were leading these tours? Well, now we know. I will tell you who that is. It's not going to be a surprise to any of us who've been paying attention. Do you want to buy a presidential pardon? Well, you can do it. You just need to have a lot of money to do it. And we'll tell you who is trying to curry favor right now with the White House and who is facilitating these pardon deals. It's just disgusting. It really is. And will President Trump do the one right thing and pardon Edward Snowden? We've got some breaking news reporting on this tonight, literally just breaking just a short time ago. So we'll tell you about Edward Snowden and whether his chances of becoming pardoned are likely or not. All of that and more on the show tonight. So welcome in, gather up. Grover is laying over here on the couch. He's watching. He's ready for a great show.
He's watching his eyelids.
He is. Yep. He heard you. He heard you. But he is excited about this because we have less than 48 hours now till President Trump gets evicted. I saw someone tweeted me earlier, sent a message, said, Clayton, stop with all the anti-Trump BS. No, I don't have anti-Trump BS. It's not BS at all. It's anti-Trump. It's not BS. And it's certainly true. I'm sorry if I'm just telling you the truth, but I call out everyone and their BS, which I will do in about a few minutes. So
you should hear him call me out about my lemonade back here. Like he calls me out for this lemonade.
Clean up your desk. What is that crap? It's just some old moldy jar of lemonade back there.
These are old iPhones. That's a DL44 on Solo Blaster. That's lemonade, as you call it. I mean, this is clean. It doesn't get any cleaner. I even got a plant. There's a tree right here. I have a plant. What?
Is that, how does a tree in that environment with no actual daylight?
Because I have grow. Lines right here? Those are grow lights. I turn those on lights once a day.
Grow lights.
They're LED grow
glow
lights.
Hobbit hole. your hobbit hole. I need to get some grow lights for my little tree here. It's looking good.
Oh, you need grow lights on that thing.
Grow lights. Start smoking pot during the show, then that'll be my next.
Well, you already drink Guinness, you might as well, right? Have a joint in one hand and Guinness in the other.
Can I admit something to you? I don't know if this makes me a total loser or what. I have never done a drug in my life.
Okay,
done one drug in my life.
I literally thought you were just going to say, I have never done the pot.
I've never done the pot. I don't know.
Make you a loser.
Never had. I mean, as long as heroin doesn't count, then we're totally fine because.
I mean, alcohol technically is a drug.
Right. Technically. We don't have to get technical about it. Technically, I'm not drinking a Guinness. This is a decaf iced coffee tonight. I start the morning with caffeine, and I wind down with decaf tonight. All right, let's get to the news on this Monday. All the news that you can use. So we're getting some news on the economy this afternoon, and it's not good. Some troubling signs. A top economic advisor to President-elect Joe Biden is just one person today warning about the U.S. economy spiraling downward, and right now is calling for swift action because we've got some vulnerabilities that the global pandemic certainly has drawn into focus, and you don't need me to tell you that, but we're seeing a widening class disparity in this country. I mean, the wealthiest Americans, the billionaires, have gotten more billions, while the middle class, whatever's left of the middle class, has all but collapsed. and people on the verge of eviction, a verge of foreclosures. People have lost their jobs, have hours cut. The list goes on and on. So Brian Deese, who will serve as the national director of Biden's National Economic Council, has some words about this. He said the incoming administration's $1.9 trillion spending plan would generate the kind of robust recovery that we need. And that's actually being echoed by Wall Street this evening. Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, and others are lifting our U.S. GDP forecast based on the $1.9 trillion stimulus package that's been floated. Now, Biden's proposal includes more direct payments to households. That's one of the big, you know, signifiers in all of this. There's an expansion of jobless benefits, more money for state and local governments, and an expansion of vaccines and virus testing programs. You know, it also calls for $15 federal minimum wage. There's some we still don't have the framework of this. I should be very clear. We still don't have the outline of how this is going to come together. So he's weighing different things from different members of the Senate and the House right now. People that want baby bonds, they want, you know, there's other members that want $2,000 checks, AOC and others who say, we got to get $2,000. None of this just $1,400 crap. You promised us $2,000, Joe. Give us $2,000. It also calls for that $15 federal minimum wage, but that's up from $7.25, $7. Can you believe that we're still only making $7.25? They're going to call on higher taxes and more regulations, more, you know, taxes for businesses that are paying virtually nothing. They've already alienated some Republicans, of course, who say they're not going to vote for it. Who cares? Who needs them? Stop trying to negotiate with these guys, okay? You won soundly in Georgia. You do not need these guys anymore, okay? Pass this stuff without them. That's what I'm calling you to do. It's also drawn criticisms from some Democrats, and we'll get to that in a second. But right now, Brian Deese is concerned that the numbers that he's seeing are showing an economic spiral that we might not be able to come back from. Listen to Brian, who's incoming economic advisor.
You are now asking, the president-elect is now asking, for another $1.9 trillion in COVID relief. Do you really need all that money?
Well, we start from where the economy is today. And the truth is, we're at a very precarious moment. We lost jobs last month for the first time since the spring. Last week, nearly a million Americans filed for unemployment insurance, which is higher than any week during the Great Recession. And last week, 30 million Americans reported that they didn't have enough food to eat. So we've got an acute economic crisis and human crisis, and we need decisive action. And so that's really what the president-elect's plan is about. It's about targeting the core issues that we know we need to tackle. We need to get shots in people's arms to get the pandemic under control. We need to get schools open so that parents can get back to work. And we need to get relief out to those millions of families, millions of businesses who, through no fault of their own, are continuing to suffer, and the economy and the virus are spiraling downwards. So now's the time to act. We know that this is going to take a lot of work, but we're ready to do it. And as you saw, the president-elect's making the case that now is the time to move forward.
Mark Zandi also coming forward. He's the chief economist at Moody's Analytics. He said this is a very large package, but it's about helping the economy hang together as well as it can hang together until the end of the pandemic. He's basically saying we're having to hold this thing together with duct tape right now. And we need stimulus yesterday, a massive stimulus package. And this is just the first of many, right? I mean, we're waiting on this the infrastructure package that'll come later. But unless we fix the underlying fundamentals of all of this right now, which is the pandemic itself, I mean, forget the fact that you have countries going back under lockdown because of more and more outbreaks. I mean, they cannot keep up with that. You know, in Los Angeles, they're literally having to stop the cremations and pause them because of air quality problems. Yeah. Walking around and there's, you know, like cremations happening and it's affecting the air quality. It's getting so bad. They're having to pause them. So we need to pass this stimulus as soon as we can. But of course, he's going to have an uphill battle. Biden will need at least 10 Republican senators to successfully push through the stimulus at a rapid pace, like what DZ is expecting. to try to win support. He needs some of those proposals being seen as, an, you know, that are bipartisan. A lot of them are going to be non-starters for Republicans. They're going to say, no way, sorry. You have a number of Republicans already coming out saying, hey, this is a colossal waste and is economically harmful. That's what Republican Senator Pat Toomey had to say. It's a colossal waste, economically harmful. He said some of the measures could slow down the recovery, but he didn't specifically point out what would slow down the recovery. Much of this money, though, from the December, and this is where Republicans are going to be sounding the alarm bells on this new round of stimulus. Senator Pat Toomey being one of them, saying, look, we haven't even seen this money dispersed yet from the December package. So how can we jump to the conclusions that we need this money? Have you not learned anything, you fools? That's exactly what you said in the summer. Mitch McConnell, Senator Pat Toomey, all of these other Republican clowns who said, what did they say? Anyone in the chat want to let me know what they said? We need to put a pause just to see how the first round of money is affecting the economy. Well, guess what? You paused, and we collapsed as a result of that. So now you're saying the same thing again, and things are getting worse. We're seeing a slowdown in the housing sector. We're seeing corporate debt exploding. And guess what? Wall Street continues to do fine as the Federal Reserve continues to pour billions into that mess, continues to prop them up. I love the gall of these senators. Well, we just passed this back in December. We got to wait and see how it all unfolds. Are you not a student of history? You tried that before, and now it's worse. And now we have over 3,000 deaths a day in the United States. We can't even keep up with it. And our vaccine distribution rollout has been a disaster. So maybe that needs to be the primary focus. And making sure that people have money in their pockets so they don't starve and they don't get kicked out of their homes. Vaccines and money in people's pockets. So DC said the Biden proposal addresses all of these vulnerabilities right now that COVID-19 has highlighted, some of these major issues. For example, increasing the minimum wage and provide direct support to Americans. He said they need to provide direct public relief to transit systems. Again, we all think about these things. You're not going to see this talked about in wealthy circles. You're not going to have them talking about this on CNBC, a network that caters to rich people, because the transit systems, the buses, the trains that actually provide the transportation to most middle and lower class individuals, that, you know, maybe there's a lot of people that don't have a car who have to get to work. And when those bus systems are shut down by 50%, or in the case of trains, 60, 70%, guess what happens? And now just think about, I just picture like a single mom who has two kids at home and she has to get to her job by a certain time and she relies on a transit system that has a regular interval schedule, right? So she has to perhaps take her kids to daycare at a certain time and then she has to hit the train at a certain time. Well, now let's eliminate 70% of that train schedule. You've just screwed this woman over. Because now, A, she has to leave her job because now she can't leave her kids alone. Or B, she has to leave her kids alone. And, you know, and what kind of a mom is that? And so these are the types of decisions you're making people have right now. And that's an awful position to be placed in. But these rich politicians, they don't give an F. They don't know. They don't care. They don't have to go through metal detectors and when they do, they start crying about it like last week. They have everybody doing everything for them. They've got socialized medicine. They're totally taken care of.
I don't want to walk through the madness.
But imagine. Do you want to take the bus, Senator Pat Toomey? I think we have like Senator Toomey here. Senator, do you want to take the bus?
No.
No, because you'd be like a normal American, right? Little Pat. Little Senator Pat Toomey. Who is not running for office anymore, so he doesn't give a crap. So, you know, avoid diminished services, diminished support at these transportation sectors. Buses, trains, all of that. Being able to take care of these for Americans that rely on that. For these cities to emerge. But I tell you, there's one big hurdle right now in the stimulus plan, and that is none other than, you know it's going to come from the Republicans, but you do not need this to come from this guy, Senator Joe Manchin, and these sort of middle of the road pretend to be Democrats who are really just Republicans. Hannah Trudeau, who's been doing some reporting on this, covering this for the Daily Beast, she says, you know, Joe Manchin's going to be one of the big hurdles for progressives trying to get any of this stuff through. Here's what she had to say earlier today over on The Rising Show.
The Democrats, you know, seemed united around the idea of this increase, significantly increased from $600, idea of a $2,000 check. Until, as you mentioned, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who last week kind of indicated that he wasn't going to be totally on board with it. Now, like you said, his spokesperson sort of walked back the statements mm-hmm. that he made, which were basically saying absolutely not, was the quote that he told the Washington Post when asked about the idea of the increased check, kind of walked it back and said, you know, no, the first thing that the senator has on his plate is getting vaccine distribution. So, you know, addressing COVID in that way first, then we'll talk about the idea of a $2,000 check.
So he tells the Washington Post, hell no, no freaking way am I going to vote for $2,000 checks. And then when you all get on the phone and start making phone calls to his office and suddenly realizes maybe that's not the best political position for me to be in. But as things kind of get a little quiet here after the inauguration, we've got to keep that foot on the gas, folks. We've got to keep that pressure on. Anyone watching from West Virginia right now, call your senator's office. Demand that he pass stimulus, $2,000 stimulus checks. Demand that he support you. Don't let him kowtow to big money and lobbyists. Hold him accountable. He's arguably the most powerful senator right now because he's like this middle of the road. I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to, you know, hang out with Republicans on these issues. I'm going to hang out with Democrats on these issues. But I'm going to show no backbone when I really need to. I'm going to curry favor with all my lobbyists. And that's how I keep getting reelected and reelected and reelected. As Joshua Schwartz says in our super chat, a failed two-party system that has finally shown us the truth. But we all want to blame one side. Either way, acknowledge the bipartisan failures for once. Here you go. This is a total bipartisan failure. I've said all along, anyone who's watched my show for any length of time, we are not a two-party system. We are one party. It is a corporate-run Democrat and Republican party. That's it. I saw a word kind of emerging over the weekend. I don't know if you saw this, David, too, but like this idea of a corporatocracy that, you know, we're not in a democracy. We're not in a theocracy. We're not in an autocracy. We're in basically a big business Wall Street corporatocracy. Corporate America runs our government.
Yeah, I've actually heard that.
That's all you need to know.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
So all of that money that pours into these candidates and tells them exactly how to vote, time and time again, it's no surprise at all. I mean, money talks. That's it. And so, you know, look at the laundry list of lobbyists for Joe Manchin. Look at the laundry list of donors for these people. And it's a real problem right now for Republicans who've had literally about $50 million pulled back because they voted to disqualify the election. Josh Hawley being asked to resign, Ted Cruz, almost every hometown newspaper in Texas is calling for Ted Cruz to resign. All of this big money is being pulled back. All of these Republican donors are having, it's a big problem. I mean, money runs Washington. That's it. End of sentence. All of K Street in Washington is just big money lobbying firms on K Street. That's it. Full stop. There's a good show called K Street I watched a number of years ago. Actually, James Carville and Mary Matlin were in the show. They basically ran a lobbying firm. Was the conceit of the show. And it had a very like Steven Soderbergh style to it. It was really fascinating. It might be hard to find. I remember I watched it in like the early 2000s or so. Intriguing to get us behind the scenes look at like what these lobbying firms do. Like they don't really care. They don't care about you at all. They literally care about lining their pockets of their corporate overlords. That's it. And that's what this entire economy is run on. So when we have somebody like a Bernie Sanders who can push and push and push to try to end this stuff and try to actually help working class people, you know, these are the types of candidates that we need to get behind. And we're going to be calling more and more attention to these candidates across different states in the coming months. As you know, these progressive candidates who can actually make a change, who do not take this big money, who do not accept corporate donations, who can't be bought and sold, that's the kind of people we need in Washington. And until that happens, we're run by these big corporations. So Joe Manchin, be prepared. My audience right now, all of you, the thousands of you watching right now, you know, get on the phone and call Joe Manchin's office. Do you still have that lower third graphic, by the way, on Joe Manchin?
No, I still have the FBI one, but I don't have Joe.
Okay.
If you could send me it, I can get it up there real quick.
Yeah, I'll get it up there once we get his number again. But I have to add it through. I'll put it in the description for everyone. But you know, this is what we're dealing with, and Grover could not be more pissed.
And demand what?
Keep the pressure on. Demand stimulus. Demand that he vote for this stimulus. That's what we need. That's exactly what we need. You know, money talks in this town, of course. We know that. And we know that, you know, if you want a presidential pardon, you can spend some money to do that, because as President Trump prepares to leave office in just a few days here, I mean, literally, like, this is what we're looking at right now. Why does this keep getting squished? Why does this keep getting squished?
There you go.
There we go. Right now, though, there's a lucrative market opening up. So if you want to pay President Trump, if you're a wealthy felon out there watching right now and you want to pay President Trump to give you a pardon, you can do that. You can get clemency. According to documents and interviews with more than three dozen lobbyists and lawyers, they've been passing this around. It's right now like a black market. A brisk market for pardons. There's all this access peddling going on right now. Oh, there's Joe Manchin's number. There you go. 202-224-3954. Give his office a call. Tell him not to be a roadblock to passing stimulus. Operators are standing by to take your complaint. Do it. It works. So there's a lot of access peddling that's happening right now, and it's been, of course, it's defined Trump's presidency, you know, as well as his unchecked presidential clemency powers that he has right now. Pardons, of course, he's got one day left, and apparently he's been only focused on this with his last day. Pardons and commutations are intended to basically show mercy to people, like you'd think, like Edward Snowden, right? But Trump has been using them to reward, like, personal and political allies. Which is no surprise at all. And so there's a growing list of people who are basically going to the White House, trying to get favors with the president right now, and bringing a bag of cash, it looks like, in order to make this happen. And it started to heat up when Mr. Trump basically had no recourse for challenging his election defeat. Lobbyists and lawyers say that they started, you know, firing up some extra money. Once they knew that he was going to lose, They were like, hey, let's go to the White House. I've got some rich friends that have some issues. They may have, you know, indictments they're dealing with at the federal level, and they're willing to pay some big bucks. Look, Trump's in a lot of legal trouble, and he is in massive amounts of debt. So, according to one lobbyist, Brett Tolman, who's a former federal prosecutor who's been advising the White House on pardons and commutations, has basically monetized his clemency work. He's been collecting tens of thousands of dollars and possibly more in recent weeks to lobby the White House for clemency. He's making tons of money off of this. He's trying to make money. He's making money off of, for one, in one case, the son of a former Arkansas senator. Founder of a notorious online drug marketplace, Silk Road. And a Manhattan socialite, I'm not making this up, a Manhattan socialite who pleaded guilty in a fraud scheme. So all these wealthy felons are basically like shoveling money at these lawyers. And that's what Trump has been doing the past few days. It's like, okay, how can I make some money off this? Mr. Trump's former personal lawyer, John Dowd, has been marketing himself to convicted felons as someone who could secure you a pardon because of his close relationship with the president. Like, if you're not disgusted by this, think about what's going on. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Millions of people are out of work. And the president is spending these last few weeks, few days, accepting tens of thousands of dollars from wealthy felons as leverage. Think about that in the justice system. A one-time top advisor to Trump was paid $50,000 to help seek a pardon for John Curacao, a former CIA officer convicted of illegally disclosing classified information. And he agreed to get a $50,000 bonus if the president granted the pardon. Oh, and we've seen copies of these agreements, by the way. Mr. Curacao was separately told that Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, could help him secure a pardon for $2 million. So good on him. Mr. Curacao rejected the offer from Giuliani, but an associate, fearing that Giuliani was illegally selling pardons, told the FBI. And Giuliani said, no, that's not what happened. You misunderstood. When I said I could get you a pardon for $2 million, I just meant I would say pardon me, and you could pay me $2 million. I didn't say anything about you getting, you know, this fraud scheme or whatever overthrown. So I love that Giuliani's out there allegedly foisting, you know, this idea of $2 million pardons, while you have this other lawyer, Dowd, who's allegedly, well, we saw the agreement. I mean, he's asking for $50,000 and a $50,000 bonus if he gets you the pardon. So $100,000. So if you got these two offers, which one do you go with? Giuliani, who couldn't manage to win one case in the election fraud department? So is there, maybe there's one pardon that President Trump would actually pull off, and that would be Edward Snowden. So we've got some reporting on this tonight, and it comes to us from Axios. They've been doing a series of looking at the presidency here in the last few weeks after the election. Jonathan Swain, of course, who you might remember from doing that excellent interview with the president a few months ago, where they went back and forth and he's showing him different papers in his hand to the president. And the president's like, well, I've never seen that. He's like, well, this comes right from your office. It was a great interview, of course. Anyway, in this reporting about William Barr, it turns out that the president, they went on the outs, as we know, right? Bill Barr, the attorney general, went on the outs with President Trump in the last few weeks. He, of course, resigned. Apparently, they came to nearly blows over the fact that William Barr couldn't do anything about the election. And when, in fact, he was in his office telling him, Mr. President, this is, he used the words bullshit when the president was saying, I lost, or I won this election. There was so much fraud. And Bill Barr said, no, Mr. President, that's not true. And so they were on the outs. But we learned from this reporting now from Jonathan Swain on the Edward Snowden question, Barr decided to quit, and I'll highlight this. Before their private skirmishes spilled further into public view, some speculated he had quit over the president's increasingly questionable pardons. But it had nothing to do with it. Barr had made it clear to Cipollone that he did not want to be consulted on these post-election pardons. He did not need to hear about them until he received the official notices. The only pardon that Bill Barr preemptively stopped was for Edward Snowden. So the only pardon that Bill Barr went out of his way to make sure was stopped is Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden tweeted tonight about that. Let me see if I can find what he said. Let me see if I can grab it here real quick. I mean, this is amazing to me. The one pardon you step in on is an American hero, but you're okay to not step in and, you know, be upset that the president's going to, you know, is going to pardon Mike Flynn or, convicted or, you know, indicted and charged Steve Bannon or any of these other clowns, you know, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort. You're going to step in on one guy, Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden tweeted a few hours ago, said, if you judge a man by his enemies, I'm doing pretty well. Because in the response to this. So we're expecting hundreds of pardons, could come as early as tonight into tomorrow. And how many of them will have paid big money to get off? Let me know your thoughts on that in the chat. Are you as disgusted as I am? I sure as heck hope so. And Steve Bannon being one of the top ones on this list. Or you know, how many other people we don't even know about? We don't know their names. They're just wealthy Wall Street people. And they've hired these attorneys. We're going to pay you $50,000. We'll pay you $2 million to Giuliani to go and get me a pardon. Not surprising at all. But Edward Snowden, no, can't do that. So we got some more information tonight on those Capitol tours. I want to bring you this news. You know, who was leading those Capitol tours that, first of all, were not allowed to happen, and they happened a day before the insurrections? Who were leading these massive tours through the building with constituents that ended up later the next day breaking back into the Capitol? Who was it? Well, now we know it's this woman, Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado, who, of course, gave that fiery speech about how her constituents were outside right before they barged right back in. She was seen, because there was plenty of people who posted pictures of tours with her the day before, people who then, again, broke back in the next day. Well, Representative Stephen Cohen says he saw Lauren Boebert giving tours before the Capitol riots. Listen to his bombshell story this afternoon.
Remarkable to hear. I want to ask you about something specific, because several of your colleagues have alleged that the rioters may have received inside help, including raising the prospect of tours conducted or with the okay of fellow sitting members of Congress. This is quite a charge to make. Have you seen any hard evidence to substantiate that allegation?
Only thing that I've seen, Congressman Yarmuth refreshed my recollection yesterday. We saw Congressman Boebert taking a group of people for a tour sometime after the 3rd and before the 6th. I don't remember the day we were walking in the Cannon tunnel. We saw her and commented that who she was, and she had a large group with her. Now, whether they were people that were involved in the direct or not, I do not know. She was a freshman. She might have had a large number of people coming to be with her on this historic occasion and just wanting to give them the opportunity to have a tour. But it was pretty clear that her team is the team. She's not on the home team. She was with the visitors.
But do you know that any people who were in that tour led by Bobert later attended the riot? That's the question I have.
Absolutely not.
Okay. All right.
So that's the question that Representative Cohen will not say.
Could you actually hear him, or was that as muffled for you as it was for me? Was it sound like he was going?
Yeah, he had a bad connection there.
Okay, because so I didn't really get what he was saying.
I hope that's I'll give you the paraphrase. So he was saying that he witnessed Congressman Boebert giving a large tour before the insurrection, before the riots happened. He wasn't sure if it was on the 3rd or on the 5th. It was right there in one of those days before the insurrection. And he remembers it because it was so large. But we know from other reporting, and actually other members or other members of her constituency were there and posted pictures on Instagram showing her taking the tour with Representative Boebert. So it's been confirmed from multiple different angles on this story. So she's giving this tour. You know, how many of those individuals end up behind bars will be interesting. We also have got some interesting reporting tonight on additional charges coming as they're starting to mount, because it's one thing for these people to have done, you know, gotten trespassing or breaking and entering or other things. But then when they start to look at broader conspiracy, broader organized, and perhaps sedition charges, and then federal charges, and that's where things are going to get really, really dicey. It'll be interesting to see, too, if President Trump, that there's been a lot of people saying, will he pardon any of these people that broke into the Capitol? How many of you think he'll actually pardon people that were involved in the Capitol riots? I don't think he will. My gut says no.
Yeah, I'd say no. There's no money in it.
Yeah, there's no money in it. Very good. Although we know some of these people flew private jets just to get there, you know. So maybe those people. In fact, that woman who did fly one of the private jets, that Texas realtor, she was an Arkansas realtor. Was she a Texas? No, she was a Texas realtor. She's been arrested. And the list is growing larger and larger. And by the way, there are many who believe, like, larger federal charges are coming. They're saying that somebody who works inside the Department of Justice said, I have never seen this department this mobilized to get action. Like, they're taking it very seriously. So these, like, little small piddly charges, expect it to be much worse very, very soon. Especially when they want to make an example of these people. Otherwise, what's the disincentive to do it again? And, you know, a lot of these different Capitol buildings they've already got different... I mean, think about this, right? Here's the Capitol. This whole area is just totally cordoned off. Can't get anywhere near it. National Guard just marching all through the city. 25,000 of them right now under lockdown. And that's what's happening at capitals all across the country right now, under lockdown. What's sad too is that today we saw this breakout. Smoke and something rising behind the Capitol. They evacuated Capitol grounds. All sorts of buildings went under lockdown. Announcements kept pouring in all afternoon, as to what was going on. Really scary, scary stuff for a little while. Here's the fire breaking out. This is like one day before the inauguration. Look at that. Like, that's all the seating. And there's fires breaking. Like,
everyone's running from the Capitol grounds.
Yeah, and everyone's running away, getting out of there. Look at this. This is this afternoon. Where do we live? I saw someone tweet that clearly this means we just elected a new pope. with the black smoke. So what was this? What was all this drama today? Everyone goes under lockdown. People flee Capitol grounds. Buildings are under lockdown. Literally, alerts going out, and they're saying this is not a drill. There's a threat. What was it? It was at the overpass right behind the Capitol. A homeless man his belongings caught fire. He lives underneath this underpass, overpass. All of his belongings caught on fire. I just want you to look at this image for a second. And just let that sink in. I could not be more struck by that paradox. Right? We've got an entire city under lockdown over fears of riots and insurrection, disaffected Americans, civil war in many ways, people feeling like we're on the verge of in this country, millions of people out of work. Here at the seat of government, there's a homeless man who can't get any attention for anything else in his life, has no money, probably has no food, it's freezing, he lives underneath an underpass, and all of his stuff catches on fire. I mean, could not be more of a, like an image, just think about the seat of power, and here's a, I mean, this, you want to talk about a failed state. This is what it looks like. Look at this. All of these people running. Sounding the alarms. Look, they're sounding the alarms.
Everyone's running from the Capitol grounds.
Everyone's running. And you hear the announcements? Hear those announcements in the background? This is an emergency. This is an emergency. So what was the emergency? What about helping this man? And then we have to worry about guys like this. Says, no, you know, we can't afford it right now. But I'm okay with my $30,000 a year furniture budget and $15,000 a month and socialized medicine. And no, I would not support universal basic income because how are we going to afford it? But yes, I did just vote for a massive military budget. But how can we afford it? This is America.
I wonder if they get leased vehicles too. We should look into that. We should look up and see every perk that they get.
$30,000 a year furniture budget for your Senate office, Senator Manchin.
And that's just furniture. I wonder what they get for staff.
Right. Oh, yeah. They're packed to the gills with staff. These reporters freaking out. Breaking, smoke rising behind the Capitol building. Inauguration rehearsals appear to be evacuating everyone. Emergency announcements playing at the Capitol grounds. Get out, get out, get out. Oh, it's just a homeless guy. Let's go back to ignoring him. Everything's fine. Probably all laughing. Oh, it was just a homeless guy that had lost all of his stuff. His winter coat just went up in flames. Oh, good. All right. Well, we got to get back to not giving a shit about him. Let's do that. Let's get back to not giving a shit. We took like 5 minutes out of our day and stopped giving a shit.
You know how much that man just cost and lost labor because all the people who were working had to walk out while they're still getting paid? Ridiculous.
Yeah, what did that guy cost these people? The Senate had to take a few minutes out of not doing anything to continue not doing anything. Here's your failed state. But we can't afford it. We can't afford to help people. Where are we, Clayton? Where are we going to get the money to help people? I don't know. How about the millions of dollars that was spent on setting up this thing? These stands and... But here's a homeless guy a block away who can't get a sandwich.
You know, if I were an incoming president, I would be like, in light of everything that's going on, you know, people can't even afford food. it's like a slap in the face for all the people to see this millions of dollars being spent just so that it looks cool so I can stand in here and be sworn in. Let's just do it on the steps and,
yeah,
you know, do it on the cheap.
Yeah. How about we take the millions of dollars that we were going to spend on a parade and we literally go around and try to help get people some sort of, you know, consistent pay, some kind of consistent health care.
Or food.
To sleep on the streets behind the Capitol. Or food. Imagine that. Yeah, richest country in the world.
They probably could have fed every homeless. For that money, they could have probably fed every homeless person in Washington, D.C. for a week. At least. I'm sure.
Oh, I bet. I was going to say at least. I bet years.
I don't even know how many. Like, I don't know how many big it is, but.
I've said, you know, who knows how many homeless people are in D.C. By the way. You know, that's a city that all of those federal workers, I mean, it's just, it's so wealthy. You look at all the cranes that, see that crane? I mean, there's cranes being built. You can see two of them in that shot. Look, these cranes are building high rises. These cranes are building luxury apartments. And this person's sleeping under an overpass and has their shit catch on fire. Look at the cranes in the distance there in that shot. They'll need a crane right there. Look at that. Cranes building stuff. Maybe building a new FBI building. That's more important than helping people. So I often think, you know, like, what if we took just $1 billion out of that wasteful defense budget, put it towards school lunches, actually gave kids a healthy lunch, or it helped schools so that, you know, teachers didn't have to buy things themselves, or like, hey, they could actually pay for their, like, actually get a good wage as a teacher. It would encourage more people to go into the teaching field, you know, just on and on. Think that we could do with that money. Get a guy like this off the street so his stuff doesn't burn a day before an inauguration.
There's awful. No money
I
in.
I was so struck by that image today.
There's no money in sustaining life, only taking it, Clayton.
Yeah. Isn't that a broken system? There's more money and I'll give you the drugs to cover up all the, you know, the cost.
Could you imagine?
I won't prevent you from getting sick.
Imagine if they took that money and they invested it in companies and contractors that built things, that helped people, that fed people. You could still have wealthy companies. You could still dedicate a lot of money to doing that, but not to war. Like, you could take the same infrastructure and be like, okay, we're going to go and we're going to help feed hungry. We're going to help refugees. We're going to help rebuild things from World War II that are still demolished. Like, we're going to go help people. And you could still have these contractors getting rich, basically, which is all they want to do. But you could do it positive. Why do they always have to go to the negative to get rich?
Well, and that's my argument for, you know, a proper Green New Deal. Like, great. Have a company, have a solar company that gets us not producing solar panels in China. Let's do it in America. You know, solar is the best form of energy. Well, that and geothermal, right? So, and it's the most sustainable. So let's build these panels here. Employ, by the way, and it, all the data shows, the wages would be 3 times higher than the oil and gas industry for people. Yes, those companies would be profitable, but they'd be profitable churning out solar panels instead of fracking in the ground, which is destroying people's drinking water and ruining the environment and causing earthquakes. What if we could incentivize that stuff? You know, everyone crapped all over Obama with, you know, tax breaks for solar companies. And the way, of course, the way all that was handled was a disaster, the Solyndra stuff and everything else. But, you know, incentivizing like they do in Europe. Like e-bikes, like buying electric bikes and electric cars with full tax breaks. So guess what? More people have bought electric cars, thus reducing their dependency on oil and carbon emissions. Like, you can incentivize things if done correctly, but there's so many greedy hands in this process, you know? So I think that's the...
It kind of reminds me of Monsters, Inc. It's like, It's like they assume that we got to be scaring people, and that's the only way that works when it, when they've not tried getting people to be happy. And it's like, just imagine if they actually got people to be happy and realized, oh my gosh, there's so much more money. There's so much, because the middle class would be spending money. Like, people would be spending money. The middle class would be happy. People would be happy. The world would be happy. The United States could be a beacon of hope again. It's just like we've just become this beacon of war. I mean, that's what everybody around the world knows us as. We are the war country. And so right. I was like thinking, it's just like, so it could be so simple, like Monsters, Inc. We need to start going for laughs instead of scares.
Right. Exactly. Just flip it around. Oh, and by the way, like, it's way more powerful when you can get those laughs instead of the scares in Monsters, Inc., right? You can power a city with that. You know, and solar panels are sustainable, certainly more sustainable than electric powered by fossil fuels. You know, you have photovoltaic solar panels, you know, that can be, they're small, they can be used anywhere in the world, very low maintenance costs, very low operational costs. Like I said, it's not quite as sustainable as, you know, as geothermal, but it's right there and it's renewable. I mean, you know, we're never going to run out of the sun. Maybe for a couple million years until that explodes. But hey, we got some time, right? Anyway, incentivize those things instead of turning us into the war country. But that's what we incentivize, is war. So that's what we make money off of. That and keeping people sick and fat. And so we make money off pharmaceuticals as well. And the healthcare industry, the for-profit healthcare industry, the for-profit higher education, the for-profit prison system. Do you see where I'm going with this? No, oh, we got to change this stuff. We can start with you guys by doing it. So thank you for joining us every day here, covering the stories you're not going to see covered in the mainstream media. We will go after both sides and call BS. It doesn't matter, but we're going to cover the stories that I think matter to you and the American people, and these progressive issues that do not get any coverage. So please subscribe to the channel. Please ring that little bell notification so you've been notified when we go live. Again, we are planning our live special inauguration episode. We will be live during it, so come join us. We'll be covering the speeches. We'll be covering the drama. We'll be covering any smoke alarms that go off, any car alarms that go off that everyone has to flee for, and find out it's just a homeless man. Everyone look away. Stop paying attention to the homeless man. We'll be back here tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Eastern time. We do this show first thing in the morning, so we'll see you back here at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Until then, everyone, have a great night. Grover says good night. David, good night to you, my friend.
Good night
to all of you.